You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. Makai Watch is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Tahiti Nui and Heaven on Earth.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Mahalo.
Heaven on Earth starts here. Organically grown non-GMO vegetable starts available at Hoku Foods and the Kilauea Farmers Market next to Kauai Mini Golf Saturdays from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. More information at heavenonearthstarts@gmail.com.
Mahalo Tahiti Nui and Heaven on Earth for supporting Kauai Community Radio.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Oh, we ain't got a barrel of money. Maybe we're ragged and funny, but we'll travel along, singing a song.
Aloha. Welcome to Makai Watch, a program about the aina, defined as those things that feed us. The program focuses on information and opportunities for community involvement and the stewardship of our resources on Kauai. Makai, toward the ocean, as all things flow to the sea, and the sea is connected to you and me. You folks all know this is the first day of our fundraiser, our spring fundraiser, and your financial support makes this program and community radio on Kauai possible. The goal for my show today is $500. We are $19 away from $13,000 in our early bird pledges, and you can make a difference today. An angel pledge, $365, a dollar a day, gives you a Kamoa ukulele and puts your name in a drawing for a seven-night stay at Ka'eokai in Princeville. That's extraordinary, folks. A seven-night stay? Man.
Mahalo to Wyndham Resort.
That's like that. A serious runaway. Thank you, Laura Christine. So, the Hanalei Makai Watch program publishes the Hanalei Moon and Tide calendar, now in its fourth printing. We hope you're enjoying your copy of the 2015 calendar. If you have comments about the content or questions or anything about the next year's calendar, want to see something else in it, please call the Hanalei Watershed Hui at 826-1985. My name is Maka'ala, and I'd like to thank KKCR for providing this program and Laura Christine for engineering it for us. We should thank her at the end after she does a really good job, right? We'll be happy to take your calls after we have introduced our subject for today. Please remember, call us, 826-7771. This is our spring fundraiser, and we will be taking pledges, but also taking your calls and questions for today's guest, if that is what you would like to do. We'll be running our regular contest today, so listen for the question and win a prize. If you have ideas for future shows, please let us know. Today's show is about kisk. No, not the smooch, the K-I-S-C kind. Kauai Invasive Species Committee. Clearly not the smooch. We're going to talk about the bad things that come to Kauai in various ways and make life hard for us and the special critters that live on our island. Before we begin, we want to remind you that this is a great time to show us you care. We know you've enjoyed the Makai Watch show because you tell us so. So, to be blunt, now please put your money where your mouth is. Contribute to KKCR and support this station and this show. This show is about facts. We've talked about shorelines, whales, birds, coral disease, and ocean safety, and many other subjects. It is also a fact that it costs money to run this station. Someone has to pay for the lights and all this equipment. Mind you, someone has to pay for Democracy Now! Show us why we pay the phone bill. Call us now, 826-7771. Okay, done with the business of the day. For now, I'll say something later. I want to introduce our guest today, the first guest with us, and we're very excited about this. This fellow is fairly new to the island, and he hit the ground running, I can tell you. Comes to us with a lot of experience. His name is Bill Lucy, and he's the new executive director of the Kauai Invasive Species Group, Committee, Council. I should ask him which way they want to work.
committee.
Committee. It's committee. Okay, it's not a council. Bill joined KISC last June. He left Alaska after 20 years where he worked as a commercial fisherman and as a biologist focused on several species of fish and wildlife, including brown bears, Pacific salmon, shorebirds, and beluga whales. I saw a thing on the news this morning with some people being chased down a highway by a bunch of bears. And I said to my husband, you know why they're being chased? Because they're running. You don't run when a bear is coming at you. Stop running. I'm screaming at the television. His work with invasive species management began with an eradication of an introduced population of northern pike. He's going to tell us what that is. That had extirpated a local run of coho salmon important to his village's subsistence harvest. I'm going to go ahead and introduce also Rachel Smith, who is the outreach specialist for KISC. She is also fairly new to the program. She joined KISC in January of this year. She graduated from the University of Missouri, I'm going to say that right, with a BA in environmental science, and after an internship with DLNR, that's our state. For those of you who are listening out of state, DLNR is the Department of Land and Natural Resources in the state of Hawaii. Took a job for them on a wetland restoration project here on Kauai, over in Mana. The other side of the island, folks, from where we sit. So, Bill, let's at least start with you. I need you to tell folks what a northern pike is.
Northern pike, it's kind of a long fish. Its Latin name is Esox lucius, which is my same last name. It's actually my clan fish, three pike standing on their tails. But so it was kind of a bad deal to take them out. But when they get moved around in salmon habitat, they pretty much wipe out all the juvenile salmon. So if they're where they're not supposed to be, you got to get rid of them.
And that's exactly what KISC is all about, things that aren't where they're supposed to be. I remember my grandmother saying, weed is just a plant out of place. And I thought, okay, I know people like that. So let's start. Thanks, Bill. I wouldn't have known. So they eat baby salmon. And extirpated means that they had replaced all of the native coho salmon.
Right, and they're not extinct, but they're gone completely from that area.
Wow. Too bad. They're good eating. Okay, so we're going to start. Bill, we're going to ask you to give us a little introduction of KISC and HISC. Oops, there's a new one. What you are and who you are and what you do.
Okay, HISC stands for the Hawaii Invasive Species Committee, and it's actually a cabinet-level committee. That's made up of commissioners of Hawaii DOT, Department of Agriculture, University of Hawaii. There's a dean that sits on that. And it's attended by various legislators. So those are the people give us our marching orders. And there's only three staff that actually attend the HISC board meetings. And those are our direct supervisors. Josh Atwood runs it. He's a DLNR employee. Underneath that, each of the islands has their own invasive species committee. The committees take various forms. Right now we have Adam Williams, he's the botanist for the state DLNR. Tim Flynn, he's with NTBG, National Tropical Botanical Garden, and Alan Rito is with the Nature Conservancy, and that's kind of our executive committee. And then we're obviously open to the public at any committee meeting. So what they do and what all the groups do is each island is very different. So our problems with invasive species are customized. So each group, each set of public citizens makes up a plan of how we deal with it. And the difference with the committees is we're not civil servants, even though we work for the state or UH system. Basically, we're almost like temporary employees. We're not guaranteed year to year. We depend on grants and state funding, which goes up and down. We're not represented by the union. So the idea with our groups is that we're very flexible. And if there's an invasion of some kind and we need to hire a lot of people short term, we can respond quickly, where the state agencies have a lot more rules and regulations and unions and things that have to govern them.
I wondered why it was organized that way. Now I understand. It's nimble. so that when we get fire ant bus out or something, you guys can hire fast. I get it now. That makes good sense. Thanks for explaining that.
Yeah, and also we don't have to just stick with working on state land, or we can work across the landscape. We work island-wide on all the islands, private properties, state land, wherever we can get permission.
Cool. Sounds, yeah, that's cool. Thanks. I know that we don't always see, there was one moment in time a couple of years ago when I saw some KISC workers and a couple of volunteers actually standing by the highway, but most of the time we don't actually know that you're even around. Okay, Rachel, so you're going to give us a little bit of an overview of invasive species and what they are and why should we care?
Yes, well, I'd like to just clarify something. We at Kauai Invasive Species Committee, we primarily go after incipient invasive species, meaning anything that's new to the island or has manageable populations. And we all know there are a lot of invasive species in the Hawaiian Islands, and we see them, you know, every day when we drive to work, albizia trees or Australian tree fern or those African snails that we step on in our gardens. But here at KISC, we primarily go after things that we can target early on and hopefully remove before a population becomes established. And the reason we care, invasive species are plants, animals, or pathogens that are naturally aggressive, and when introduced to a new environment can be especially aggressive. Invasive species often displace native species, they threaten biodiversity, and can also negatively impact agriculture and our quality of life. Hawaii is home to more endangered species than anywhere else in the world. Even though we make up less than 3% of the United States landmass, we have 25% of the endangered species here in Hawaii.
And the reason for that, folks, is because most of our species and critters evolved and grew up without any predators. So when a predator comes in or something comes in from the outside that's new or strange, it doesn't take long for them to have a real negative impact. We hear that we're the invasive species capital, or the endangered species capital of the world. But I think it's important to keep saying, how come? How come that, you know? And the reason our native things are struggling so, and many of them are down to zip. And the Kaloa Maoli duck is down to less than 1,000, we believe.
Exactly.
It's terrifying. But it's because it never saw a mallard. It didn't see anything else. And it didn't see, you know, some of the chemicals. And, yeah. Oh, and the kitty cat. So they don't know from all that stuff, right? I mean, I've watched the albatross up on the hill sit there, and the cat comes, and he just sits there and looks at it and says, you're an interesting-looking albatross. Never saw you before.
Right. We evolved. The Hawaiian Islands evolved 2,000 miles from anywhere else. So everything that evolved here, like you said, evolved in peaceful isolation without natural predators. Anything that didn't evolve here endemically either came by ocean, wind, or wings by birds. So that doesn't allow for many natural predators to get to the islands. And like you said, things can be wiped out relatively quickly. Of the 42 native endemic bird species that are living in Hawaii, 32 of them are federally listed.
Wow.
And there are 200 native Hawaiian plants that are critically endangered, which means there are 50 or less individuals in the population. So there's a reason to protect the island. There's a reason to go after invasive species.
Well, somebody has to protect them. If we're the ones that are bringing in the predators, and most often we are by transport of ships or us or whatever, then it seems that it's part of our kuleana to at least try. I'm sure we have lost, and I'm sure we will lost. I know National Tropical Botanical Gardens keeps doing some DNA work to try and bring some of the plant stuff back, but it's long and arduous work, and it's they had these pictures of the their workers hanging off the cliffs out at Napali to get the last little plant of this kind in the world, on the planet. So there's plenty to do. It's not as though folks are looking for things to do. And I do happen to know that KISC is often soft funded, as we say. It's a, you know, competing for grants with other places. And the song we sing is that this is Kauai and it's about the place. And these things make our place what it is. These things matter. Rachel, talk a little bit about the Hawaii Invasive Species Awareness Week, please.
Hawaii Invasive Species Awareness Week coincides with National Invasive Species Awareness Week, which is in February of every year. And this year's theme was invasive species is everyone's kuleana. Just like you stated, Maka'ala, it's really important for everyone to kind of keep their eyes and ears out. And that's really easy for people to do. You know, especially this time of year, we get a lot of orchids and other flowers coming in from other islands around Mother's Day and in the springtime. And there are quite a few invasive species that are hitchhikers inside of plants. So it's easy to kind of keep your eyes out, ears out for anything that could be hitchhiking in there, like a particular type of ant or a koki frog. Also, you know, there's a lot of easy ways we can kind of protect different regions of our island. You know, we have a threat statewide from invasive species coming into the islands, and then we also have a threat within the islands in that there are many invasive species on the other islands that we don't have here, such as mongoose. And then we also have a regional threat where there are some invasive species that are only living in Wailua Valley, and we plan to eradicate them because they're a manageable population, but it would be detrimental if they were somehow moved to Kokei. And things can easily hitchhike on, for example, the bottom of your boots, inside of your tread, or any of your hiking, hunting, or camping gear that you're moving around the island. So it's really easy for people to kind of take care and make it your kuleana to take care and help prevent the spread of invasive species. Little things that we can all do.
Give your hunting dog a bath. I'd like to say thank you to Kristen from Ahonui Gardens and Aaron from Kaneohe. Aaron, I don't know if you know, but that's the place of my birth, so it's Kaneohe's fault. So we have $60 so far and $440 to go to meet my show goal of $500, which means that if I get one angel, that gets us almost there, reminding you that for $50, you can get a Chico tote bag as well as the talk story with Ledward Ka'apana. So let's hear from you folks, 826-7771 for those of you in our area code. Laura, would you say the 800 number?
866-275-1112.
See, there's no
toll
way.
Free.
There's no way in the world I'm ever going to remember that number. She's going to have to say it every single time. Okay, so back to the subject here. I really like that it's everyone's kuleana. I think it's like so many things in a village. It takes the village. It takes all of us, and it takes education. People need to know, hunters need to know that what's on the bottom of their boots or the bottoms of their dog's feet or in their dog's fur is going to matter, and that it makes a difference, and that it's an easy fix. You know, that's easy to do. Wash your boots. And we talk about this kind of thing often when we talk about some of the nearshore marine stuff. You know, when you're snorkeling and diving, and if you're in an area of coral disease or alien algae outbreak, you know, clean your stuff. Clean your equipment before you move to the next location. I think we just need to start getting in that habit. That's just a habit, right? So, since you brought them up, and they have been a subject of KISC's outreach in the past, and thank you for not bringing the critter that you have on the wooden stand, because he's freaky scary. Bill, talk to us a little bit about mongoose. Do we have mongoose on Kauai or not?
Well, there's a paper in review right now coming out of UH, and there's sort of three scenarios. One is that we have a small incipient population. Two, what people are reporting, and we get dozens of calls every year of people seeing mongoose. They're seeing kittens or big rats or other things. Or we have introductions periodically, and they never really get rolling because it's one or two, and maybe they're both male. We are going to try and really get to the bottom of this at the end of this summer. We've gotten some backing from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. It's being funded by oil spill mitigation money. There was an oil spill in Kauai a few years ago, and that money is being brought to bear on the mongoose question. The issue, obviously, with mongoose is that if they get here, we're going to lose the bulk of the nene goose populations, the Kalua ducks, all your water birds, all your ground nesting birds are going to be severely impacted by this. The other islands have them, and they have a very hard time, ground nesting birds, of making a go there. So you can kind of envision Kauai almost as an ark for a lot of these species simply because there are no mongoose there. So it's a very large priority for KISS to keep it that way. We're going to have an international meeting in August. We're bringing some people in from Japan, south of Okinawa, Amani Island. They've eradicated 99% mongoose off of their island.
Wow.
And all four of the endangered species showed immediately rebounds in their population. So
how'd they get rid of them?
I think they had four or six dog handlers with dogs, 30,000 traps. They fenced all the island into sections, and they really, it was a full commitment. But the species, the endangered species, are really recovering. So hopefully we don't have to ever deal with that. We're also going to bring in some people from New Zealand. New Zealand is probably one of the foremost nations in the world dealing with invasive species management. And after that's probably Hawaii.
And they're not too different from us. I mean, people might, you know, it's good to remember that it's an island. And they had many species. Think of all the weird things they have in that part of the world. They had many species that evolved, you know, uniquely there that never saw predators as well. So, good. We let them sort out the science and figure out the best strategies, and then we'll just use that.
Yeah. So we're just going to bring everybody together and come up with a plan, and then we're going to start focusing on biosecurity. We really need to get some fences around the harbor, and the harbors have been really good about letting our people set up live traps down there to monitor for mongoose. We've been doing that consistently for about 3 years. We did catch two mongoose, live mongoose, on the island back in 2012. Actually, one of the harbors cornered the mongoose for us and gave us a call. So everyone's kuleana. A lot of the businesses are really good about keeping an eye out for us. So that's going to be the big thing after this is inter-island biosecurity, because that's where, as Kauai, I stated before, is in pretty good shape compared to some of the other islands, and we'd really like to keep it that way.
Yeah, we certainly feel like Noah's Ark. I think we're going to take a little bit of a break and remind you all that this is our spring fundraiser, and for $50 you get a really cool Chico tote bag and a tuck story with Ledward Ka'apana. We're really close to our $500 goal if you give us an angel. Come on, an angel. I know there's an angel. I've been doing my work. I sent emails to 150 people. I Facebooked 450 people. Come on. Thanks so much for your calls.
826-7771.
She has to say that because I forget. Thank you. about you guys. That was a wake-up call. I'm assuming you all know that we just overplayed Miles with... I'm still hearing music, Laura. She's trying to... Oh, see, that's why. Oh, my God. How people in Hilo sleep is beyond me. Okay, now, Laura, crank. Holy cow. Okay, so the good news is that only the koki makes that horrible sound. But it's enough, isn't it? Is that, if that's not motivation to support KISK and their work and and any efforts you can do to let them know if you hear that sound anywhere, for heaven's sakes, get a hold of KISK. Give me a phone number, Rachel, for...
821-1490. Okay. Or the email is very easy, kisk@hawaii.edu.
kisk@hawaii.edu. That's a good one. Okay. So let folks know, let them know. If you hear that sound anywhere on Kauai, for heaven's sakes, let them know. Because they're, once they get started and once they start singing, they're not easy. Okay, so we are going to run our contest today. And Laura can take calls, I think, while we're doing our thing here. And so, of course, the contest question, we know you were all listening carefully. How many live mongooses? How come it's not mongoose? How many live mongooses have been trapped on Kauai? How many? Laura knows the answer. Do you? Answer the question. For once, she actually knows the answer. Answer the question correctly and win a prize. Okay. So, Rachel, let's go on to the little fire ant. He's little, but he's mighty, and he hurts when he bites.
This is true. A little fire ant is really actually little. There are quite a few biting ants in Hawaii. In fact, there are over 54 species of ants in Hawaii, and none of them are native. The little fire ant is different from most of the other ant species living here, as it is an arboreal species, meaning it lives in the trees. And we call it the little fire ant because it's actually really tiny. The length of the ant is as long as a penny is thick. So the thickness of a penny, that's how tiny they are. They're native to Central America, and they were introduced to Hawaii in 1999 to a single site on Big Island and a single site on Kauai in a remote location here on the North Shore. Since then, Kauai Invasive Species Committee, along with the Hawaii Department of Agriculture and the Hawaii Ant Lab out of Big Island, have worked to maintain the population on Kauai, and is at a manageable level. We're in the final stages of treatment and plan to eradicate it. After that, we will continue to monitor for it. So we're really lucky here on Kauai that it has remained in the same location. Big Island, on the other hand, is not so lucky. It's spread to most of the east side of the island, as well as some of the western parts, and is now found in multiple locations on Oahu and Maui. They pack a powerful sting. They live in the trees, and so if you're hiking or you're working in agriculture where you have to harvest fruits from a tree, it can be dangerous. As they fall on you, they get stuck under the collars of your shirts and can bite your neck and around your ears. And there's some places in Big Island where people are just having to let their crops go because you can't pay somebody enough to be harvesting coffee and flinging fire ants at you all day. They've become quite an invasive pest over there, and we're really lucky here to have them contained.
And other than hurting, which they hurt, we had little red ants when I was a kid growing up in the Marianas. I know they weren't fire ants, but we remember they hurt. But we knew where they were. You could see the mound on the ground, and you knew to avoid it. This is something that's fallen out of the sky, and I know that they've actually really harmed some animals too. I mean, if they attack an animal in mass, you know, the eyes and can blind them and really do some permanent damage. I mean, these are not to be messed with. So if anyone thinks that they have fire ants or have a question about where fire ants are, again, the website is kiskethawaii.edu, and Rachel, I should get that phone number again so I say it more than once.
821-1490.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Super. So we're going to talk, folks, about a lot of these nasty things, so just, you know, buck up here. This isn't a show about paradise today, particularly. And the next one is one that our cousins in Tahiti have been dealing with for a very long time, and I know that some people think that this is a pretty thing. This is a decorative thing and a pretty thing, and it is an almighty invader. So we're talking about Myconia. Bill?
Yeah, Myconia. It is pretty, actually. It's got a nice purple underside. The problem with it is that it will overtop the native forest and shade it out, and the stand will become completely Myconia, 100% monotypic stand is what they call that. And there's regions of Tahiti where the forest is now just Myconia. And what that does is it destabilizes the soil. There'll be no brush growing underneath it because of the shade. And then when it rains, the mud lets loose and large landslides takes out highway infrastructure. There's nothing in there for pigs to eat, so your favorite pig hunting area is going to be devoid of any fruits or any kind of attractants for that quarry. Your diversity, your birds aren't going to be able to use it, except some of your invasive birds do eat the seeds and transport them. Like the Japanese wide-eye will eat Myconia seeds and transport them. Fortunately, right now, the only Myconia that we know of on the island is in the Waialua watershed. And we did have one flowering tree. We don't think it went to seed that we got out of a helicopter last month. It's one of the techniques we use is we go up in a helicopter in a known infestation area, and we use a paintball gun filled with a tiny amount of herbicide, and if you can hit the top of the tree with a couple of paintballs, it kills it. Then we send in ground crews that have to wade through unbelievable jungle, and they go and look for seedlings underneath those areas. And we go out 3-4 times a month, and we're doing that month after month after month. It's an ongoing battle. We hope that the seeds don't last more than 15-20 years and we can finally finish the job.
Yeah, no kidding. I remember when that technology was first proposed here. It was proposed for the Australian tree fern. And one of the keys to the Australian tree fern issue was the cooperation we got from people like Leila Nishek and the Kauai nursery and landscaping folks. They were extraordinary. Leland is to be remembered and commended every chance we get. He's not the only one now, but he was the first brave soul that said, I'm simply not going to sell them anymore. And people couldn't figure out what he was talking about, but he got it. He understood.
We have a caller with a question.
Okay. You're on KKCR. This is Maka'ala. Did you have a question?
Caller, are you on the air?
Laura lost you. She'll get you back. And when she gets you back, I'll take your question. But in the meantime, there's another one. This one is weird. Nobody's heard of this one. I hope there aren't very many of these guys, because I haven't heard of this one. Coconut rhinoceros beetle.
Coconut rhinoceros beetle. It's a big, giant beetle with a rhinoceros horn on the front of it. It is native to Southeast Asia. It's the newest pest threat to the Hawaiian Islands. However, we are lucky here on Kauai that we have no known infestation, as well as most of the other islands. It was introduced in December 2013 at Joint Base Pearl Harbor Hickam, I think is what they're calling it now.
So it came in on a plane or something?
Most likely, they assume it came from Guam at another military site and entered the military site here in Hawaii on Oahu. An uncontrolled infestation has the ability to wipe out coconut trees across the island. These beetles bore holes into the developing fronds of a coconut tree so that when the frond develops, it comes out with these strange looking triangular shapes with holes in the leaves and pieces of the leaves missing. It's very distinct and noticeable. And what happens over time is the leaves cannot continue to use photosynthesis and the tree won't be healthy, and essentially all the leaves fall off and the coconut tree dies.
So we had something here several years ago in our banana called bunchy top disease, and it was easy for folks to notice that they had something wrong with their banana. So it sounds like this might be the same. If in fact this coconut rhinoceros beetle was in the coconut tree, we would see, hopefully you get it before then, but we would ultimately see a funny looking coconut tree.
Yes, the hole in the developing fronds, and again the strange shapes in the developed leaves are
the signs. Giveaway.
Yes.
And we don't have it yet on Kauai.
No, we don't have it here. However, if anybody thinks that they have it in their yard or they see signs of it, definitely give us a call. We work with, again, Hawaii Department of Agriculture closely on this matter, and we'd be happy to come check it out.
Great, great. So, again, folks, these are all, you know, things that we're part of the Army. We're part of this committee. We may not call ourselves that, but it's going to take a village for these things. These things are in our remote areas and on our farms and in our villages and places, and KISC is a very small organization, can't possibly be everywhere. And we are their eyes, and in the case of the Koki, we are their ears. And even false reports need to be called in, because if you're not sure, don't hesitate. If you're not sure, but you think maybe, I would be willing to bet that they would prefer that, excuse me, that you call in and have it checked out rather than have it be one of these and not be...
I think we have another caller.
Okay.
Caller, are you there?
Laura.
Caller, can you hear us?
Nope. Okay, Laura's going to sort that out. Or, Laura, why don't you relay the question? Get them back on the phone. Got it? Okay. She'll relay the question. If you're persistent and you really want to know, then call us back, and she can relay the question to me until she figures out what's going on with the board. One of the things that happens during our fundraising time is that we get a lot of people in and out of the studio, so somebody turned a knob. Okay, I want to remind us all that this is the spring fundraiser, and we would like you to support this program and other programs like it on KKCR. For a $50 donation, you can get a Chico tote bag, as well as the Ledward Ka'apuna Talk story. You don't have to give that much. We're happy to take your $10 membership donation. You can get a nice bumper sticker for that. And there are others. $75 will give you a t-shirt. $150 will give you two t-shirts or a hat, etc., etc. But the one I want you to think about seriously is the dollar a day, the $365 angel pledge, which gets you a Kamoa ukulele, as well as you participate in the drawing for a seven-night stay at Ka'eokai in gorgeous Princeville. That seems to be worth it, a drawing ticket to me. So thank you for your support, and please call 826-7771. Okay, so we're down to false kava. I never even heard of false kava. Kava is special. Somebody made false kava just to fool us, or that's not a good thing.
Well, false kava is native to Central America, and I used to be involved in aquaculture down there in the Peace Corps. And when we'd harvest fish down there, we would wrap them in the false kava leaves and bake them, and it adds a kind of a nice licorice flavor. The problem is when it gets to Hawaii, it makes big stands and kind of chokes out all the other vegetation. We actually have a very diverse patch of kava, awa, on the farm, on the Sitar farm. That's from several different islands. I think it's the second most diverse collection. And so,
wow, that's cool.
Yeah, so we try to steward some of those old lineages. And we give them away at Arbor Day, So if you come to Arbor Day, you can probably get a free plant.
Okay, folks, we used to talk about Arbor Day. You can get this pretty little flower, or you can get this KOKO. The heck with that. They're giving away Ava. We've got a whole new campaign pitch. When's the next Arbor Day?
It's in November.
Oh, darn. We got to wait a long time. Okay, but the good news is the plants will grow really big between now and then. So that's we really have to push that. If you're giving away Ava, we're there.
So if you do have that plant, you can go to our website to find out the difference. We'll bring you a replacement plant.
Wow.
Of the black stem, one of the real ones. Yeah.
The good ones.
The good kava. So, yeah, we are pretty close to, I think, eradicating that one from the island. And some people just made the mistake because it looks fairly similar. Hopefully it'll be gone in a few years and we'll just be planting the real stuff.
Are there pictures of these things on your website?
Yes.
Okay, so folks, if you think you have something and you're just not sure, go to the KISK, just Google KISK like everybody else does, and go to the website and see which one your plant looks like. Because I know we have Ava on our land as well, and I'm assuming it's the good kind, but I'm probably going to go check because I certainly don't need to be growing the wrong one.
It's important to note that the false kava actually does not have any medicinal properties. And like Bill said, it was accidentally introduced because somebody thought it was true Ava. And there are quite a few ways you could go out in your backyard right now and just test it out. Bill mentioned earlier the licorice that they use for flavoring. The false kava, if you break the leaf, you smell it. It smells like licorice. With true Ava, if you break the leaf, it smells like a leaf.
That's a very simple test.
Then
we don't have to be dragging it down to you.
Exactly.
Good, good, good. Now, you mentioned where you are. You're up Kuamo'o.
Yeah, we're at the end of Kuamo'o Road at the College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources Farm, the experimental station. There's a number of people up there now. The Nene Goose Recovery folks are there, Fish and Wildlife Service, plus all the Farm Bureau people, or the CTAR people. So we kind of have a little group of people working on conservation at the end of Kuamo'o there before you get to the arboretum.
That's a good spot. Then it's kind of like a comprehensive campsite. Yes, Laura?
That last caller, he had a question about, he heard that there was a big fence around Alakai Swamp in Koke'e. I was wondering if that had to do with invasive species.
There are... One thing we do at KISK is we work to bridge the gaps. We fill in the gaps between different conservation organizations on island. So there are some other groups that work up in Koke'e. We don't do a lot of work specifically in Koke'e. If there is a fence, don't quote me on this, but I would assume that it would be NARS, Natural Area Reserve Systems. They're a sector underneath Department of Land and Natural Resources Forestry Division. I know that Katie Castle with Koke'e Resource Conservation Program, they also have some enclosures. But most of the time, these enclosures are specifically for endangered species, and they close off an area to pigs and goats and deer that might come in and predate on the endangered and native species, but that wouldn't be specifically us.
So sometimes it's a bird, and sometimes it's a plant, and sometimes it's a critter of some sort that they're trying to protect, and instead of fencing the mountain, the area might be in a limited fencing. It's not the size, I don't think, as it is up Wainiha or up Lumahai, the kinds of fencing projects.
We have another caller that has a question.
Okay.
Dean's here to help me, so maybe it'll work.
And Dean's going to be on.
Caller, are you on the air?
I'm here, yeah.
Okay, great.
Trala.
Aloha. Calling, with the rhinoceros beetle, it's not entirely coconut specific, and it affects other palms as well, and that also it can be transported in mulch or like tree trimmers mulch.
Oh, that's good to know.
And infest compost piles that have palm stuff in it.
We all know we've got lots of that, right? So when we grind up the stuff, and okay, so does it make the other palms look the same? Does it make them look funny? Can you tell?
Well, yeah, and you can also see big borings in sometimes in the trunk or in the crown area.
Okay, good. So there's something you can see, yeah.
Yeah, but then also I appreciate that you did share with us that, you know, this pest was brought by Department of Defense just because other people besides, I don't know who all uses that hip bone, it's joint use facility, Navy, Air Force, yeah. But as to some of the other critter, you know, pests, you know, like the fire ant or the fire caterpillar or, you know, the folks, how did those things get started here? The Department of Ag in the past has been, hasn't really shared the information, even though they know exactly, you know, who brought certain things. They, you know, they don't share that.
Yeah.
And they try to point the finger because I asked this question, and they say, "Oh, you just want to blame people," and it's we'd like to have the responsibility, you know, so that we can learn from someone else's mistakes.
Yes, yes, and I know that for the North Shore, at least my information is some of these things come in with landscapers. You know, they come in from one nursery to another, and I myself have a daughter that raised orchids on the Big Island, and she would ship me stuff and anthuriums as well. And we went through a fairly strenuous exercise of trying to wash them at that end and get them at this end, just because I didn't want the cokey.
We have another caller.
Okay.
Yeah. And as far as that goes too, yeah, is that I would suggest that we do much less of that kind of shipping. And that, see, those folks are, like you're saying, the landscapers, they're members of an organization generally, and then they use that organization as a lobbying voice for them, that we need to share that these people are, in some instances, the source of the problem, and so that when those folks lobby, that our legislators need to understand that these folks are not as all squeaky clean good. You know, intentions may be one thing, but when they actually do cause these problems, it should reflect in their lobbying, you know, just, you know, some of it is also, you know, the larger corporations then use those landscapers or whatever to speak out against, like, say, the labeling laws for GMOs or pesticide control areas and that sort of thing. So
yeah.
Thank you, and I'm sorry to take so much time.
No, that's wonderful. It's an important contribution, Bill.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate those points. And one of the things that we support is Grow Local, Buy Local. It supports Kauai businesses, and since we are mostly cokie-free and LFA-free, it would be a good idea for us maybe to be doing some exporting as well, since we don't have a lot of these pests here. So
No, don't export. Yeah, it's like, you know, please.
No, not that.
You know, that's where the problems come from, and it's, you know, gosh, I've been into the, like you were talking, NARS. I've been doing that for over 35 years now, and it's like the plants are, you know, of the place are, you know, struggling so much, and people just keep planting, oh, they like this palm, they like that palm, they like this ginger or something. It's like, wow, you know, I wish I could share you know, my personal passion for the native plants and that sort of thing.
And we can hear your passion, and we really appreciate your call. And it's okay with me if we build up the stock before we start exporting, too. I get it. I understand.
We do have another caller.
Okay. Thank you. Aloha. Thank you. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello. Yeah, this is Anthony on the west side.
Hi, Anthony.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. So, the as a correction, I did not go to the sanctuary hearings at for health here on Waimea side, but a friend of mine who I was talking to who went, he has informed me about these large fences, and he's not talking about a simple cordon off an acre or two. This is blocking off Alakai Swamp. Now, there was no hearing, and we're blocking off Alakai Swamp. The people of Kauai don't even know that it's there right now. Hmm. I want to know, someone said there might be someone else. It's not them. But
yeah,
this is typical of corporation. The Syngenta has just lost a bid to not pay for the damages by the wind that they blow and all the dirt that gets into somebody's house, and it just causes a problem. So these problems come from one source and one source only. And that's not the federal government. Everybody keeps saying it's the federal government. It's not the federal government. It is corporations. Corporations pay lobbyist money. Lobbyists pay all the legislators' money. And we see it right now. Indeed, David Ige tried to appoint those two people to DLNR, and everybody got up in arms about it because we are going towards corporation. And I am sick and tired of being a state or county. The only thing we have is tourism. I'm tired of that. Now, I want to know where those fences come from, and I'd like you to put that lady on so she can inform me about that.
Okay. All right. Well, I think what Rachel suggested that it might be NARS. She wasn't sure. I'm happy to take your question.
I've never heard of them.
NARS is the Natural Area Reserves. It's another division of the state of DLNR. You can Google it. They have a good website.
Hey, why are we hiring all these people to do stupid things to put up a fence without even telling us?
Yeah,
this is my background. I haven't been up to Koki in a while because there's so much blackberries that I can't get around to doing anything.
Ah. The blackberry is an invasive species, and there are crews up there in Koki that are working to remove it.
You can't get rid of it. You have to dig the thing out. I wish the root of the blackberry was something we could eat, but I would
me too.
Eat it.
Yeah. I have it on my farm as well. I wish that was true. It looks like a sweet little berry.
We had a problem with the frown pig because they love the blackberry. They'll just rip that up and eat everything.
I haven't found anything
and
they don't
every
want.
Every area that I ever been into, and I've lived here all my life, and I'm 70 years old, now I can't get into it because of blackberries.
Yeah.
And people have torn down the Mokihana trees down to shrubs on the ground. I can't even get Mokihana.
All the more reason invasive species work is important.
You come over here, you tell us you're going to do good, but you folks don't do any good. It's just like this sanctuary thing that people have.
Okay, thank you, Anthony. I'm gonna let you know. We're coming
up
on the clock. Thank you. I appreciate the calls. I really do. And I will certainly check on who's doing the fencing up there. And next month's show, I will report back as to who's doing the fencing up there because I haven't been up there in a long time, that's for sure. Okay, so where are we, Laura? We're just about PAL. So I want to make one last pitch, please. I want to thank Bill and Rachel for coming in. I want to make sure that you support the spring fundraiser for KKCR and support programming that's factual like this. Also, if you have a question, call KISC 821-1490. If you want to donate to this program and this show because you're interested in protecting those native things we have on the island, please call the show at 826-7771 and contribute. Aloha, ahui ho. Sharing our load side by side.